Well, the Mandela effect is making the rounds again, so of course we gotta talk about that. Also, there's a toxic space fungus that scientists don't know if it's dangerous or not. If it's toxic, doesn't that kind of indicate that it's dangerous? We're gonna talk about all that and more on today's Peck Report. Hey everybody, Josh Peck here. Hope you're having a great day today. Lots to get to. So, the Mandela effect has been making the rounds on the Gaia network, on Gaia.com. So if Gaia says it, then you know it's got to be true, right? I mean, that's a pretty reputable news source there. Very scientific, very accurate, not really prone to wild interpretations or just complete lies. We don't see any of that. So of course, we could probably take everything at its word. maybe not. So we're going to have to talk about this because it has to do with CERN and hidden parallel universes. This is something that I know quite a bit about. I've written several books on the topic. On CERN, Tom Horn and I, best-selling author Dr. Thomas Horn and I, wrote Abaddon Ascending, where we talk about CERN in light of Bible prophecy, specifically CERN and also just quantum physics, how and by the end of that book, you'll understand how the Large Hadron Collider is actually how it works. And you don't have to be an utter genius to understand it. The main concepts are actually pretty simple. And then Hidden Parallel Universes, I wrote a book called Unraveling the Multiverse, talking about different interpretation of multiverse theory and how we as Christians can look at that. But this Mandela effect thing, it got really, really popular like a couple of years ago, and then it kind of faded off, and it's not as talked about anymore, but it's kind of going through its last dying gasps of breath. I think that's what we're looking at now. And we're going to talk about all this stuff, how we can know that the Mandela effect is not, CERN has nothing to do with it. It doesn't have anything to do with time traveling demons changing the Bible or anything. And you might think, well, how can you say that? I will get into it. I promise. Before we do, I have got to tell you about the world's most finest guitar strings. Now, those of you who know me well know that I have spent over half my life playing guitar, specifically acoustic. I play electric, too. I actually learned on an electric guitar, but now that I'm kind of getting older, if I have an electric guitar, I have to go down to the basement, I got to plug in an amp, I got to get the pedals, and it's got to be a whole thing. And I don't have time for it. And acoustic, I can keep upstairs in the living room and just kind of play from time to time throughout the day, so it's great. So I've been really more into acoustic guitar lately, and I really like Guitar Authority strings. So guitarauthority.us, they are fantastic acoustic guitar strings. Don't take my word for it. You can try them out yourself. Very reasonable priced, and if you go there now, there's a special Peck discount on the world's finest acoustic guitar strings. Now, right now I am in Memphis, and I do not have my six string with me, but as soon as I get back home, I am going to show you how beautiful these guitar strings sound. I'll play you a little something so you can tell. But for now, check them out yourself. If you don't play guitar, I'm sure you know somebody that does. Go ahead and pick up a pack or a three pack for your friend or family member who is a guitar player, and you won't regret it. They are fantastic. Please support this business. It's a family-owned business. They're great people. You won't regret it. That is guitarauthority.us. You can find that link in the description below, or just go to dailyrenegade.com, or just go directly to guitarauthority.us for that discount. You don't need a promo code. You don't need anything like that. You just need to go there, and you can have the discount. Okay, so yeah, Gaia.com recently put out this article called "The Mandela Effect: CERN and Hidden Parallel Universes." I think the main idea, the whole crux of this issue, why some people look, I don't think that people who believe in Mandela effect are stupid I don't want to insult anybody, but the Mandela effect idea itself, in some iterations of it, there are some very wild explanations for why this is occurring, why people remember things differently. And specifically for Christians, I would say there's one version of the Mandela effect theory that says that Satan somehow, either a demon or through some sort of time travel or somehow the enemy has managed to change certain verses in the Bible, because, you know, people will read a verse and they remember the verse differently, and so they assume that the Bible has been changed. My question would be, if they had that power, why would they not change the name of the Messiah so you're worshiping the wrong person? Or if that's true, how do you know they didn't do that? How do you know the enemy did? See, it gets to this point. The logical conclusion is that you can't trust your Bible if that's true. So did God give us a fallible word or an infallible word? That's the question. And how can we know? And then, you know, I've heard people say, yeah, but I remember, or they'll say, well, the word was written on our hearts. Okay, true. But also scripture says that your heart is deceitfully wicked. So how can you know that you can trust your own heart? See, ultimately what it comes down to is a person is trusting themselves, their own memories, their own feelings, their own subjectivity, over the objective facts of the Bible. Now that's just in the Christians who believe in this. There are many other people who believe in this who aren't affiliated with Christianity at all. And some of them even believe that they are literally from a different dimension, a parallel universe, because they have different memories. And I've heard people say, you know, I'm just not from here. This isn't my home. What is the benefit of that? The benefit of that is for that individual, whether they recognize it or not, that there's every single one of us has something inside of us, some subconscious want or need to feel set apart, to feel unique, to feel special. Now, there's nothing really wrong with that. And we all have that. I think a lot of it is tied to the fact that we know we're going to die someday. And at least in physical life, we don't have any hope of immortality in physical life. I'm not talking, again, I'm not making a Christian argument here. I'm just saying, just purely on a physical, material world level, we don't have any hope of escaping death. We know we're going to die. So the closest thing that we can come to, not dying is having the memory of us remain. Well, how do you get the memory of yourself to remain in people? Well, you got to be special. You got to be set apart. All the people that we read about in history, the people that have really made a mark on the world, they were special and unique in some way, because they did great things. They did amazing things. So there's this inner need that we all have to, you know, feel special, to feel unique. Now, the Christian interpretation of that would be that we all feel that because we all know that we have a certain separation from God. And when we submit to Jesus, when we accept Jesus as our Lord and Savior, then we have that feeling of wanting to feel special that should be met by the Holy Spirit, because Jesus Christ, God in the flesh, literally died for each and every one of us. So that does make us special. You know, Christ died on the cross for me, even when I was at my worst, while I was still yet sinning, he died for me. And so that means I am special to him. And that's the ultimate version of being special. You know, I'm so special that God in the flesh, God himself, Jesus Christ, himself died for me. So that would be, you know, the Christian answer to that need that we all have, that drive, to have something special about ourselves that we then go and talk about to everybody. And that you can really see that in the comments. You know, I don't believe anybody who believes in the Mandela effect is necessarily really all that distraught about it. I think that sometimes they might act like they are in YouTube comments and things like that, but I don't think anybody actually is, because they're talking about it so much. You know, they're talking about how they're special. They're unique because they're from another universe that didn't have the Berenstain Bears. They had the Berenstein Bears, which, by the way, we all have that memory, so you're not really special there. And I know there are several other Mandela Effect type things. Now, there are organizations, there are companies that will take advantage of that need that we have and perpetuate lies in order to benefit themselves. So, you know, Gaia.com is putting out this article, and maybe they do believe it, maybe they do believe it's true, but they seriously twist around science quite a bit, and we'll get into that, to make this point that the Mandela Effect is actually happening. And why? Because they know that it appeals to people who actually believe this. It's going to get a lot more clicks. It's going to get, and people who don't believe it, it's going to get people like me to talk about it on their show. Now, I'm talking about it on the show to try to show you how you can defend against this, to warn you against this stuff, to show you that there is nothing scientific about it. There is nothing that supports this idea. And actually, when we think about time, like what time actually is, what we know about time, Mandela Effect is absolutely impossible. And we'll get into that. But let's go through some of this article. So it says the concept of the Mandela Effect is simple. Over time, a few minor details surrounding significant events and therefore our perception of these events might somehow change and may continue to improve in the years ahead. In other words, the tried and true space-time continuum that appears to be the backbone of our collective three-dimensional physical reality might have a ripple in it. It also may have produced a sister parallel universe, which has birthed different scenarios, events, identities, constructs and relationships. It might also be true that our tiny, insignificant brains are slowly evaporating and can no longer handle every detail that flashes across our eyes. As we forget events out of fear, we attempt to reassemble them in our imperfect minds. Now, I'll stop there just for a moment. If there are other dimensions, and we'll get into this, but if there are, there's two different ways to look at other dimensions. There are parallel universes, which that's not really extra dimensions. That's not other dimensions. That's kind of a misnomer. Parallel dimensions is something, or parallel universe, excuse me, is something completely different. Now, extra dimensions are imperceivable. What would you say? Dimensions of, I don't want to use the word definition in the definite, the word dimension in the definition for dimension. Maybe it's better to think of an example. So let's say you have a book. I don't have one right now, so I can't show you one, but you know what a book looks like. You have a book, it's made up of many pages. Now a book is a three-dimensional object, right? It's made up of three dimensions. You have up and down, that's one dimension. You have side to side, left and right, and you have forward and back. Those are your three dimensions. You have six directions, you know, up, down, left, right, forward, backward. Two directions make one dimension. So you have three dimensions, X, Y, and Z, if we remember high school geometry. So that's a book. When you look at a book, you have a three-dimensional object. But that three-dimensional object is made up of two-dimensional slices, pages. Now, I know technically a piece of paper is still a three-dimensional object, but just for sake of illustration here, let's say it's a true two-dimensional object. And interestingly enough, in quantum physics, two-dimensional objects can have a thickness. It's called the Planck length. So let's just imagine, and it is incredibly thin, but let's just imagine that you have a book that are made up of Planck length thick pages. I mean, you'd have to have billions of them to constitute a book, you know, trillions. But let's just say, you know, just for those who say, well, you know, a piece of paper has, you know, it's three-dimensional too. A true two-dimensional plane actually still does have a thickness, but and it's the Planck length. But anyway, so a three-dimensional object is made up of two-dimensional planes stacked one on top of another. That's how you get a three-dimensional object. Now, parallel universes are like the different pages of the book. One person, you know, a two-dimensional person living on page one has no hope of going down to page two because there is no up or down for a two-dimensional being, right? They have no hope of traversing down to another a parallel dimension. Now that other dimension is still two-dimensional. You know, page two is still two-dimensional, you know. So that's a parallel universe. A parallel universe to us would be another three-dimensional universe, possibly like our own, possibly not. But it would be a three-dimensional universe that we would, in a sense, be stacked on top of. Now, for us to understand that, we would have to add a fourth spatial dimension that we can't conceive of in our brains. But just like a two-dimensional being cannot conceive of the book, cannot conceive of the entire three-dimensional construct of the book, if our universe is made up of four dimensions, four spatial dimensions, we can't conceive of that fourth dimension that houses all of these three-dimensional universes. Okay, so parallel universes are one thing. An extra dimension would be like up and down for that two-dimensional being. So it would not be right to say that the extra dimension up and down is the same as page two, the parallel dimension. They're not the same thing at all. Just like it would not be correct to say a parallel universe to ours is the same as a fourth spatial dimension. It's not the same concept at all, but these two get conflated quite often. So I just wanted to put that out there. When it comes to talking about extra dimensions, we're talking about extra directions. You know, instead of only being limited to up, down, forward, backward, side to side, you also have now two new directions that we can't conceive of in our brains. We can't imagine what that would even be like, but that's what it would be. A parallel universe is a universe that is, in a sense, stacked on, not up and down, but stacked on in this fourth spatial dimension, this new direction that we can't think about. It would be stacked in that direction. So I just wanted to put that out there so we understand the difference between those two terms. So even if parallel universes do exist, there is nothing to say that universe has to be anything like ours. Maybe it's made of, you know, you could probably get as far as to say it's probably made of the same sort of stuff. You know, it's probably made of, you know, matter, you know, atoms and you know, all that stuff. But you can't, it's a giant leap to say that it's so similar that there are other versions of us out there. Just like page one and page two, yes, it's made of the same stuff. They're made of paper. They contain, you know, the same types of things on them, you know, ink and everything. But that ink, the building blocks of these two-dimensional universes, these pages, they're arranged in different ways. Every page has different words, different arrangements of words. There is nothing to say that it would be any different for our, if there are other universes, for our parallel universes. There is no reason to believe that there are parallel versions of ourselves out there. That's called many worlds interpretation. And for it to work, many physicists say that you need infinity. And infinity is not possible in physical by physical constraint. You would have to have something outside of space and time for infinity to be possible. Carl Gauss, famous mathematician, talked about that. If you have a math problem of any magnitude and you come up with infinity as your answer, you made a mistake, you know. So, excuse me. So infinity is impossible. Many worlds seems to constitute you would need infinity, but even that is a misunderstanding. Many worlds says that For every change that could be made, even on the subatomic scale, for every change that could be made, let's say a photon moves one Planck length this way instead of this way, for every change like that, a new universe exists to realize that change. And then it's just easy for them to say infinity, but that change would, all those changes would still have a number. It wouldn't be infinity. It wouldn't be continuing on and on and on. It would be a very large number that we can't conceive of, but it still would be a real physical, like it would be a number. There is a limit to how many changes have happened since the beginning of time all the way till the end. And it's because we have time in the first place to hold all that in. So we could talk about that, but just like a two-dimensional being who does not have access to up or down, it would be impossible for someone on page one to get to page two. It's not possible for us to travel to another parallel universe if it exists, even if we have high technology and everything, because our technology is based on three-dimensional objects. It's three-dimensional. Everything's three-dimensional in nature with what we work with. It's just like how can a two-dimensional being create something out of two-dimensional materials that can then lift him up into the third dimension? Because there would always come a point where you have to have something of two dimensions that can become three dimensional. Scientifically, there's it's impossible. There's just no way. We'll leave it for there. Let's continue on in the article. There's more I can say on that. And by the way, this is a very brief synopsis of a lot of complicated and deep topics, but the basics are simple enough to understand. Okay, so it says, get this line: given that we're all probably of the same species, is that disputed? Is that really disputed? You see this in people who think that they like have alien blood or that they're extraterrestrial in nature. You see that same drive to want, you know, there's something in them that tells them they're special. And again, that's not wrong. It's just the interpretation of it are wrong. So some people are led to believe that they're not of the human species. They're something else. Even though all the evidence would suggest otherwise. But it says, given that we're all probably of the same species, each of our brains might make mistakes that are akin to the next, especially when it comes to certain types of events instead of details. It's important to consider that our brains are continually comparing, analyzing, and constructing ideas and memories to justify their notions of reality, often from poorly assembled concepts in thin air. Given that, it might be fair to say that all brains build memories and memory bridges with similar strategies and outcomes. All this to say that because of our shared DNA, our brains will construct similar data sets and similar conclusions. Well, you know, even that's a very subjective statement. Like, what does that mean? Similar conclusions? Because how far do you take that? You know, it seems to me everybody disagrees with everybody on everything. So I don't know how far you can really take that. Now, do our brains, our physical brains, operate in roughly the same way? Yeah, probably. But I think that's about as far as you can take it. It says, maybe this is a question we've yet to ask. Have large groups of people moved backward or forwards in time? So it goes from this line about, you know, how our brains work to then this. Maybe this is the question we've yet to ask. Have large groups of people moved backward or forward in time, witnessed potential trajectories, returned to their primary space-time paths, and then somehow integrated all collected information into new perspectives, refreshed with new sets of details? All right, so let's look at this logically. If there are parallel universes, and if there are other versions of yourself, let's say that's true. These are still physical universes. If you traveled to one of these universes, you would be a duplicate. You would be a duplicate of the one. You wouldn't. It's not that you would slip into that dimension and live your life and think everything's fine. You're like living in the body of this other you or something, and then you slip back. You're still a physical being. You know, you're still physical, as would be the other duplicate you. Just like you can't inhabit the body of another person, you wouldn't be able to inhabit the body of your duplicate. And by the way, the whole duplicate idea, that's just biology anyway. It would still be a different person. All it is biology. It's just the way that your body is constructed. It speaks nothing to the consciousness, the soul, the mind, none of that, because you can't really test and measure that based on physical principles. So your duplicate, it's actually a different person. It's not you. You know, it's not you to the point that you can traverse in and out of different bodies and different dimensions. You know, it's still a physical body. It's only the way the particles in your body are arranged. You know, that's the only thing that's being duplicated in this other universe. Again, it speaks nothing to the soul or the mind or consciousness, none of that stuff. So if you slipped into another dimension, you would literally bump into yourself if you're like in this same relative area. Now, it could be disastrous if you're exactly in the same place at the same time. Then you would have two human bodies. You would be melded together in such a way that it would probably kill you both. Or you might explode or something. I mean, it would be disastrous. It would be you're basically trying to cram two human bodies in the space of one on an atomic level. It would blow apart. The forces involved on an atomic scale with all that, you'd just be a melted pile of mush at that point. So that doesn't work either. So if there are parallel dimensions, they would have to be physical. They would have to be three-dimensional in nature, because ours is. And if we're talking about an actual parallel dimension, then that's how it's defined, as a three-dimensional universe parallel to our own. So, and some might say, well, how do you know? You know, what if it just operates on a different types of physics than ours does? Well, then it's not really a parallel dimension at that point. That's like, how do you know if you turn a page in a book, you're not going to see a shoe? It's because how would it fit? Like it's not a book at that point. Or it's a very flawed book. It's a very stupid book that nobody would buy. You know, I mean, there's nothing to say that it would work that way. You're not going to open a book and find a shoe. You're not going to find an actual true parallel universe that operates on different physics than our own. There is no reason to make that giant leap. Now, as far as moving forwards and backwards in time, time is a whole different issue here that comes up with the Mandela effect question. So people will say, well, and for some reason, CERN is always pulled into this, and maybe it's just the mystery on how CERN operates and how the Large Hadron Collider works, but it's actually not that as mysterious. It's not a time traveling machine or anything. The physics behind it can get complicated, but the basic physics behind it is pretty simple. It all operates on what's called quantum field theory, which is the most accurate science known to man. So we know a lot about it. And time travel plays no part in it. But let's say that time travel is possible. Well, now you have one of two possibilities. You have parallel universes, or you have a single universe. You know, either there's many universes or there's one. There's the only other option would be there's zero, and we know there's at least one because we live in it. So there's a common question in time travel theory. It's, you know, the grandfather paradox. If you go back in time and you kill your grandfather, do you exist? Well, it depends on if there are multiple universes or not. If there's not, then if there's not multiple universes, then you go back in time. You kill your grandfather, you never exist, which means you're never alive to go back in time anyway, which means you just never existed, your grandfather lives. It's impossible. So time travel in a singular one universe is impossible, cannot be done, because it runs into all these paradoxes and you can't get around them. It's either that or you travel back in time and you're just unable to change anything, but that's illogical as well because you still have free will. Just by being there, you would cause change that didn't exist before. So if there's one universe and not parallel universes, time travel into the past is impossible. Into the future, you can do that. Actually, that does happen. That already happens. The faster you travel, the more velocity you have, the faster time goes for you. So there are people who actually do travel like milliseconds forward in time, like astronauts and stuff, and fighter jet pilots and things like that. And that's actually been scientifically tested. So that happens. But that's totally different than going back in time with foreknowledge and trying to change something that happened. So the other option is, well, if you do change stuff, if you're able to change something, then parallel universes must exist. And now you're in one. You're in a parallel universe. You are now in a universe where your grandfather is dead and you don't exist in that. Your body double, your duplicate, will not be born in that universe. But you exist there. You exist there, but you're not from that parallel universe. You're not from that universe, so you can be there without there being any paradox at all. It's just your duplicate, your parallel self would never be born. That's all it would mean. So it just means that you're now in a parallel universe. So that might be, but that also means that you're not changing anything else in the original universe. In the original universe, you're not changing anything. You're not influencing it one way or another. So if I went back in time right now and I went and cured cancer, let's say. Let's just say I went and cured cancer. I was going to say blow up a building, but that's kind of violent. Let's say I go back in time and I cure cancer like 100 years ago or 50 years ago. So I travel back 50 years, cure cancer, and great. I'm famous. Everybody knows my name. It's great. Everything's good. That only affects that universe. It doesn't affect my original universe. In my original universe, the one that I left from, cancer still exists. Nobody knows me for, curing cancer or anything like that. I have not affected my original, timeline of my original universe at all. Nothing is affected. No one would know any different. All that would happen is somebody, like if somebody saw me get into a time machine, they would see me disappear and never come back, you know? That's all that would happen. There would be no influence, no changes would occur in the original timeline. Now, because it's either there's one universe or there are multiple parallel universes, there's no other option. It's got to be one of those. Because of that, that constitutes that time travel would work in one of those two ways. It would not work in some weird way where somebody goes back in time, they change something, and we're getting these weird ripples, and we see little changes here and there, but we remember that it wasn't always like that, and our memories would be gone. If somebody legitimately changed the timeline and changed the name of Berenstain Bears to Berenstain Bears, we would not have the memory of Berenstain Bears. We would have always known it as Berenstain Bears. You know, it wouldn't be able to be changed and isolated in just certain areas where just, oh, somehow all the books have changed, but we all have our memory. There's no rational way of even of making that work logically. There's no theory whatsoever that somebody could put forth on how exactly something like that would work. It just wouldn't. There's no reason to believe that it would. Even more with our Bibles, you wouldn't have the memory. If somebody was able to go back in time and change your Bible, you would never notice the change. You would never know. You wouldn't have some vague recollection of it being different. You would have always learned it the way that it was changed. And so again, if we're going to be bringing scientific things into it, like time and CERN, notions of time travel, if we're going to bring science into it, we got to bring science in all the way. We can't just bring it in halfway and then make up the rest. It doesn't work that way. We got to be consistent. So with the whole Mandela effect thing, with what people are saying, they're saying it ignorantly. They're saying that it's all these things because they believe that it is, and they can't explain it. They don't have a real reason for believing it besides the fact that some part of them wants it to be true. That's all it is. And companies like, you know, Gaia and others, Ancient Aliens, they'll capitalize on this stuff. They'll capitalize by taking advantage of people who really, they just want to know they're loved. That's really all it is. That's what this comes down to. They want to know that they're going to be remembered, that they're loved, that they're special. A lot of people don't have that. They want to know that. And it's easy for them to fall into stuff like this. So that's why I said at the beginning, I don't think people who fall into this are stupid or anything, but I do think that we need to think a little bit more about this. And if you're using this as a way to fulfill that need, I would suggest finding a different way, because this will ultimately betray you. It'll ultimately leave you behind, because there will come a day where you realize you're not special in this way. And if you don't realize that, then that is a tragedy, because that is an entire waste of a human life that is actually very special and very worthy of not being wasted by believing in this kind of stuff. So the article continues from there. Those were the main points that I wanted to talk about. There's a lot more we could get into. There's a lot more to debunk, you know, there's much more, but I wanted to just kind of go through the basics of it, in light of this article that's been making the rounds. Now we do got to talk about space fungus. but before we do, it is time for me to tell you about the USCCA. Now, what is the USCCA, Josh? You might be asking me that. Josh, I've never heard you talk about the USCCA. How have you kept this secret from us for so long? There has not been a single Peck report where you've ever mentioned it. You're probably saying to yourself if you've never seen the show before. Well, the USCCA is the United States Concealed Carry Association. It's an organization that stands up for your rights as a responsibly armed American. They're hands down the best self-defense provider out there. And it's not only for gun owners, even if you don't own a gun, but you'd be willing to do anything that's necessary to protect yourself or your family, you're going to face our legal system. And there's a lot of political baggage that comes with that, even loss of rights and things. And you don't want to deplete your life savings just to prove your innocence. So the USCCA steps in and provides upfront funds to cover bail and attorney fees, criminal defense costs, everything. And you can even choose your own attorney. They have a large list of pro Second Amendment attorneys in every state that you can trust to defend your rights as an American citizen. So there's a lot of benefits to it, but with the USCC, you can be confident that you'll be taken care of if, God forbid, you should ever have to defend yourself with or without your gun. Again, it's not just for gun owners. It's absolutely for gun owners, but not only for gun owners. So you don't have to take my word for it. You can see for yourself. All you got to do is click the link in the description below, or you can find the banner at dailyrenegade.com, or, very easy, text PECK, P-E-C-K, to 87222. The number is 87222. Just text them my last name, P-E-C-K, and see what they have to offer. You're not going to be disappointed. We got to talk about this space fungus that is toxic, but scientists for some reason can't figure out if it's dangerous or not. It's kind of ridiculous. But for that, you're going to have to become a member at Daily Renegade. Why become a member? Listen, do it. Become a member of Daily Renegade today, because then you can have access to full, ad-free, and exclusive videos that you cannot find anywhere else. This is stuff so controversial that YouTube won't even allow it on their platform. We've gotten so many videos removed. It's actually what started Daily Renegade in the first place. Just to be a safe haven, free from censorship. So you're going to get full episodes of Peck Report with, you know, myself, full episodes of this show, full episodes of Peck Underground Church, Apollineering with Seth McVeigh, The Christian Contrarian with Gary Wayne. Now we have Through the Black Uncensored with Jared Kressman and Tom Dunn. We're bringing on Bio Warrior very soon to talk about natural health and even conspiracy stuff as well. Two new shows are going to be coming very soon, and way more that's not going to be allowed on YouTube. You'll have full access also to our members-only message board, where hosts and viewers can fellowship together. So a membership to Daily Renegade, it is only $10 a month or $100 a year. And that's actually the better deal, because then you get 2 months for free. You can just pay once, and then you don't have to think about it for a whole year. But either way, it works out to be less than a cup of coffee a day, and it breaks down to you having access to three or four videos, sometimes more, per every dollar of your membership. Let's say you spend $100, there's 364 days in a year. If we post 4 videos a day, which most days we do, 3 or 4 videos a day, your $1 of your membership is getting you 3 or 4 videos. You're not going to find a deal like that anywhere else. So to be a member today, just click on the link in the description below, or just go to dailyrenegade.com and click on the members tab. We're also undergoing a lot of changes to the website. It's going to be all redone and beautiful. You're going to love it. We're also looking into Amazon Fire TV Stick. We're going to develop an app for that so you can watch it on your smart TV. And we're going to get an app for the phone. And we got lots of plans. Also, we're going to have online conferences with myself and then the other hosts that host shows on Daily Renegade. We're going to have online conferences. So it's gonna be great. It already is great. So you want to become a member today? All right. So I think we're gonna call it good for YouTube. Everybody else, if you're a member, hang on because we're gonna get to the space fungus thing. If you want to learn about space fungus that is toxic but may or may not be dangerous somehow, go be a member at dailyrenegade.com. All right, YouTube. Love you all. Take care and God bless. All right, members. Well, the time has come. There's this supposedly toxic chemical that the headline on Live Science is there are toxic fungi in space, and no one knows if they're dangerous. That's the actual headline. It's toxic. No one knows if it's dangerous. If it's toxic, wouldn't it kind of be dangerous, don't you think? That's probably a safe assumption. So it says potentially dangerous fungi are living on space stations and spacecraft right now, but we have no idea if they're harmful to astronauts, and scientists need to do much more research to figure that out. That's the takeaway from a new study published on April 11th in the journal Astrobiology, reviewing what's known about mycotoxins, fungal compounds that can harm humans in space, apparently. So, you know, the Earth is teeming with microscopic inhabitants like bacteria and single-celled fungi. So it's no surprise that these constant companions have managed to hitchhike with humans aboard the International Space Station and other space-going vessels. So scientists have done a fair amount of research on bacteria in space, but these fungi remain relatively misunderstood and understudied. So part of the reason that these microbial mushroom cousins typically cause health problems only in people who live under stressful conditions or who have severely compromised immune system. So that's why. But the prolonged stress of space flight has been shown to affect astronauts' immune systems. So a team at Ghent University in Belgium wondered how fungi might... I think I'm going to say fungi. I don't know how to pronounce that word. I think I'm going to say fungi. wondered how fungi might affect astronauts' health. In a review of the scientific literature, the little that came up was mostly related to the detection of different fungal species. So Sarah DeSager, a pharmaceutical scientist at Ghent University and co-author of the new paper, told Live Science, quote, "But about mycotoxins, we found almost nothing." End quote. So, you know, that's a problem because the specific fungi that's been found on spacefaring vessels such as Aspergillus flavus and members of the genus Alternaria are known to produce carcinogenic and immune-depressing compounds. And those molecules often form when fungi are stressed. So if space is a stressful environment for humans, which obviously it is, it may be stressful for fungi as well. Now, whether or not astronauts are actually being affected by such toxins remain unknown. So DeSager's team recommends that space agencies do a better job of detecting and researching mycotoxins in spacecraft. And in particular, they suggest that new methods should be developed for monitoring the surfaces and atmospheres of spacecraft. So currently, most fungal detections are made by sending samples back to laboratories on Earth, but that won't be possible for long duration missions such as crewed flights to Mars. And DeSager stressed that the presence of mycotoxins doesn't necessarily mean danger to astronauts, which how if they're toxic, yes, that does mean danger to astronauts. But it says here on Earth, people are often exposed to these compounds, but their specific contribution in to different diseases is not always easy to trace. On the other hand, nobody quite knows how fungi might grow and evolve in the enclosed environment of a long-lasting space mission, DeSager said. Now, Adriana Blachowicz, who investigated fungi on the International Space Station but was not involved in the recent study, told Live Science, quote, "I think the biggest message is that fungi and bacteria are an integral part of human bodies. Wherever we go, fungi and bacteria will follow." Kind of reminds me of that movie Life, if you've ever seen that. It says bacteria have been shown to become more virulent in space, so there is some worry that fungi could as well, she added. So it seems like these things can kind of morph and evolve and change, and that's a problem. But I think if it's toxic, we should just call it toxic, and it's probably safe to assume that, yes, they're extremely dangerous, and we should be careful. So that is our show. Of course, I want to know what you think. Leave me a comment on the website or in the message board. I would love to know. And thank you for being a member. Thank you for your membership. I love you all, and can't wait to read what you have to say. All right. All that being said, take care. God bless.